Chapter 10, Managing God's Money.
Work God's Vineyard. The men in positions of trust should regard the means they handle as God's revenue and use it in an economical manner. When there is an abundance in the treasury, they are not to invest it in adding building to building in places already provided with memorials for God. Hundreds of other places are in need of this money, that they too may have something established to represent the truth. All parts of the Lord's vineyard are to be worked. The power to use and disperse the Lord's money is not to be left to the judgment of any one man. An account must be given for every dollar expended. God's means is to be used at the proper times and in the right places, that it may be a blessing and also an object lesson of how He works, in accordance with principles of equity, justice, and righteousness. October 24th. Never take action to narrow and circumscribe the work unless you, butler, know that you are moved to do so by the Spirit of the Lord. Our people are doing work for foreign missions, but there are home missions that need their help just as much as these foreign missions. We should make efforts to show our people the wants of the cause of God, and to open before them the need of using means that God has entrusted to them to advance the work of the Master both at home and abroad. October 31st. Strict integrity required. The president of the conference should learn whether the business transactions are carried on with the strictest integrity. He should know whether they are presided over by men who have pure, clean hands. His indignation should be aroused against the slightest approach to a mean, selfish action. Let one wrong deed be practiced and approved, and the second and third will follow in the same line of fraudulent deception. The accounts of every business, the details of every transaction, pass the scrutiny of unseen auditors, agents of Him who never compromises with injustice, never overlooks evil, never palliates wrong. Ed 144, 1903. The means that come into the hands of the workers in the Lord's cause belong to God and are to be used in an economical manner. When large sums of money are given to the work, let a portion of the means be laid by, for there will be emergencies to meet in the Lord's great vineyard. October 25th. EV 89. Finances to be handled by consecrated business people. The student of sacred history will observe that throughout the ages, God has distributed the responsibilities of the varied interests of His work in the earth among men whose talents fitted them for service, and who by training might become skillful in the service required. In His work today, the Lord would be pleased to have those who are engaged in any part of His service guard against the tendency to take upon themselves responsibilities that they are not called upon to bear. Some of His servants are to direct the business matters connected with His work in the earth. Others are to look after the spiritual matters. Every laborer is to strive to do well his part, leaving to others the duties entrusted to them. For years, the Lord has been instructing us to choose wise men, men who are devoted to God, men who know what the principles of heaven are, men who have learned what it means to walk with God, and to place upon them the responsibility of looking after the business affairs connected with our work. This is in accordance with the Bible plan as outlined in the 6th chapter of Acts. We need to study this plan, for it is approved of God. Let us follow the Word. It is a great mistake to keep a minister who is gifted with power to preach the gospel constantly at work in business matters. He who holds forth the word of life is not to allow too many burdens to be placed upon him. He must take time to study the word and to examine self. If he closely searches his own heart and gives himself to the Lord, he will better understand how to grasp the hidden things of God. Let ministers and teachers remember that God holds them accountable to fill their office to the best of their ability, to bring into their work their very best powers. They are not to take up duties that conflict with the work that God has given them. It is time for our ministers to understand the responsibility and sacredness of their mission. There is a woe upon them if they fail of performing the work which they themselves acknowledge that God has placed in their hands.
The finances of the cause are to be properly managed by businessmen of ability, but preachers and evangelists are set apart for another line of work. Let the management of financial matters rest on others than those set apart for the work of preaching the gospel. Our ministers are not to be heavily burdened with the business details of the evangelical work carried on in our large cities. Those in charge of our conferences should find businessmen to look after the financial details of city work. If such men cannot be found, let facilities be provided for training men to bear these burdens. Men of experience in business lines, with a practical knowledge of bookkeeping, should be chosen to superintend the keeping of the accounts in our institutions at home and abroad. Close investigation of the business transactions in various departments of the corps are to be frequently made. This work must not be neglected. Never are we to sanction any transactions that imperil the purity of the Lord's Church and of His institutions, which are His appointed instrumentalities. Those in charge of the work have erred sometimes in permitting the appointment of men devoid of business tact and ability to manage important financial interests. A man's fitness for one position does not always qualify him to fill another position. Experience is of great value. The Lord desires to have men of intelligence connected with His work, men qualified for various positions of trust in our conferences and institutions. Especially are consecrated businessmen needed, men who will carry the principles of truth into every business transaction. Those placed in charge of financial matters should not assume other burdens, burdens that they are incapable of bearing. Nor is the business management to be entrusted to incompetent men. Men of promise in business lines should develop and perfect their talents by most thorough study and training. They should be encouraged to place themselves where, as students, they can rapidly gain a knowledge of right business principles and methods. All may improve. No one needs to remain a novice. If men in any line of work ought to improve their opportunities to become wise and efficient, it is those who are using their ability in the work of building up the kingdom of God in our world. In view of the fact that we are living so near the close of this earth's history, there should be greater thoroughness in labor, more vigilant waiting, watching, praying, and working. All the religious service and every branch of business are to bear the signature of heaven. The Lord's cause is always in need of men who are true and loyal, men who firmly adhere to right principles. Competent, faithful businessmen should be appointed to make close investigation of the business transactions of the men occupying positions of responsibility in the cause. This work has been strangely neglected. We must not sanction any transactions that imperil the purity of the Lord's Church and of His institutions, which are His appointed instrumentalities. It is a fearful thing to work in such spiritual blindness. But you, Cicely, see the policy. You see the result of going in debt and going on and on by our institutions as though men had lost their reason. They build their towers without first sitting down and counting the cost. They do not consider how they must meet the armies in warfare with a limited number of men, or how to secure a larger number. All this shows a lack of wisdom and sound financiering ability. Men should have been employed in every country who have keen foresight as well as aftersight. There should be careful examination of the account of every conference, in every publishing house, and in every sanitarium, to see what disposition is made of the monies received. God wants faithful stewards. He will not accept such shoddy work as is done in advancing His kingdom in order to save a small sum of money. In these large establishments, disinterested men must be employed to investigate all the transactions that pertain to the institution. Things have been left to drift with incompetent accountants, half-fledged bookkeepers.
Work has been done and means appropriated according to one man's ideas and judgment. The means required to employ qualified, conscientious, God-fearing men for such an examination would have saved millions of dollars to the cause of God. But the Lord knows it all. We must now repent for our lax management. I have been shown that men have sat on the auditing committees who have not had discrimination or judgment.
Farmers who have no real understanding of the situation of the workers have again and again brought real oppression and want into families. Their management has given occasion for the enemy to tempt and discourage the workers, and in some cases has driven them from the field. It is not justice nor righteousness to deal in so cool a manner with this phase of the work. God is not glorified by any such arrangements. The inward fountain of life needs cleansing, and the human will needs to be under the sanctification of the Spirit of God. Poor management impedes God's work. In the past, one set of men have tried to keep in their own hands the control of all the means coming from the churches, and have used this means in a most disproportionate manner, erecting expensive buildings where such large buildings were unnecessary and uncalled for, and leaving needy places without help or encouragement. They have taken upon themselves the grave responsibility of retarding the work where the work should have been advanced a hundredfold. It has been left to a few supposed kingly minds to say what fields should be worked and what fields should be left unworked. A few men have kept the truth in circumscribed channels, because to open new fields would call for money. Only in those places in which they were interested have they been willing to invest means. And at the same time, in a few places, five times as much money as was necessary has passed from the treasurers and been invested in buildings. The same amount of money used in establishing plants in places where the truth had never been introduced would have brought many souls to a saving knowledge of Christ. For years, the same routine, the same regular way of working has been followed, and God's work has been greatly hindered. The narrow plans that have been followed by those who did not lift up their eyes to see the fields all ripe unto the harvest, and have not had clear, sanctified judgment, have resulted in a showing that is not approved by God. God calls for a revival and a reformation. The regular lines have not done the work which God desires to see accomplished. Let revival and reformation make constant changes. Something has been done in this line, but let not the work stop here. No, let every yoke be broken. Let men awaken to the realization that they have an individual responsibility. Debt-free operations. God does not want his work to be continually embarrassed with debt. When it seems desirable to add to the buildings or other facilities of an institution, beware of going beyond your means. Better to defer the improvements until Providence shall open the way for them to be made without contracting heavy debts and having to pay interest. The publishing houses have been made places of deposit by our people and have thus been enabled to furnish means to support branches of the work in different fields and have aided in carrying other enterprises. This is well. None too much has been done in these lines. The Lord sees it all. But from the light he has given me, every effort should be made to stand free from debt. The publishing work was founded in self-denial and should be conducted upon strictly economical principles. The question of finance can be managed if, when there is a pressure for means, the workers will consent to a reduction in wages. This was the principle the Lord revealed to me to be brought into our institutions. When money is scarce, we should be willing to restrict our wants. Let the proper estimate be placed upon the publications, and then let all in our publishing houses study to economize in every possible way, even though considerable inconvenience is thus caused. Watch the little outgoes. Stop every leak. It is the little losses that tell heavily in the end. Gather up the fragments,
Let nothing be lost. Waste not the minutes in talking. Wasted minutes mar the hours. Persevering diligence working in faith will always be crowned with success. 7T 206, 1902. In a vision of the night a short time ago, I was in council meetings. At these meetings, words were spoken that savored of the human more than of the divine. The medical work in Great Britain was under consideration. Plans were proposed which, unless modified, would bind about the work and fail of relieving the situation. The General Conference was asked to pledge itself to raise a sum of no less than $20,000 or to become responsible for that amount to establish a sanitarium in Great Britain. Because Elder Daniels refused to consent to place this additional obligation upon the General Conference, he was severely reflected upon by some. But, under the existing circumstances, he felt that he was forbidden by the Lord to lay this burden upon the conference. I honor Elder Daniel's judgment on this question.
But to return to the council meeting. Once more the one who has long been our counselor was present, to give us the word of the Lord. He said, "The Lord would not be glorified by your placing a yoke of debt upon the General Conference. In a special manner he has wrought to break from the necks of his people the binding yokes of debt which they have worn so long. The conference must not again tread the same path that they have trodden." November 9th. When there is a seeking of the Lord and a confession of sin, when the needed reformation takes place, united zeal and earnestness will be shown in restoring what has been withheld. The Lord will manifest his pardoning love, and means will come to cancel the debts on our institutions. September 26th. When to seek loans, it is right to borrow money to carry forward a work that we know God desires to have accomplished. We should not wait in inconvenience and make the work much harder because we do not wish to borrow money. Mistakes have been made in incurring debt to do that which could well have waited till a future time. But there is danger of going to the other extreme. We are not to place ourselves in a position that will endanger health and make our work wearing. We are to act sensibly. We must do the work that needs to be done, even if we have to borrow money and pay interest. June 16th. The question now before us is, shall we try to secure the places that seem desirable in price and location, when we cannot tell where our money is coming from? Brethren Daniels, Knox, and others are opposed to the increasing of debts. But I am not prepared to say that we should not, under any circumstances, purchase land to which the Lord seems to have directed our minds, when there is no hindrance but the question of ready money, and which property, in the providence of God, we could soon pay for. We have to guard against mistakes on both sides. If we see a good opportunity to secure a building, as in Paradise Valley, I think it should be purchased. The idea that a sanitarium should not be established unless it could be started free from debt has put the brake upon the wheels of progress. In building meeting houses, I've had to borrow money in order that something might be done at once. I've been obliged to do this in order to fulfill the directions of God. For the last 20 years, I have been borrowing money and paying interest on it to establish schools and sanitariums and to build meeting houses. The institutions thus established and the churches built have been the means of winning many to the truth. Thus the tithe has been increased, and workers have been added to the Lord's forces. God would have the standard lifted higher and still higher. The church cannot abridge her task without denying her master. Meeting houses must be built in many places. Is it economy to fail to provide in our cities places of worship where the Redeemer may meet with his people? Let us not give the impression that we find it too great an expense to provide properly for the reception of the heavenly guest. In laying plans for building, we need the wisdom of God. We should not needlessly incur debt.
but I would say that in every case, all the money required to complete a building need not be in hand before the work is begun. We must often move forward by faith, working as expeditiously as possible. It is through a lack of faith that we fail of receiving the fulfillment of God's promises. We must work and pray and believe. We are to move forward steadily and earnestly, trusting in the Lord and saying, "I will not fail nor become discouraged." Sunday afternoon, I related to the congregation some of our experiences in Kurenbong, where in beginning the work, we walked out in the providence of God. I spoke of the difficulties we encountered and of our struggle to obtain means. You remember how Elder Daniels was so burdened that he prayed all night in the open air for the Lord to send us the necessary means that we might carry out his will in that new, unworked field. You remember how we all worked and prayed and believed, knowing that without faith it is impossible to please God. The Lord gave messages to our brethren in Australia that then was their opportunity to use their entrusted capabilities in the Lord's service. When they should act their part, walking and working in faith, practicing self-denial, then they would find that the Lord would work for them.
Let not the words found wanting be written against God's people. While we should thankfully receive loans of money with interest, yet the Lord calls for larger free will offerings. We must be careful about the matter of borrowing large sums of money, for often this will result in our being placed in a strait place afterward. There may be no trouble so long as those are living who have loaned the money, but when they become sick or die, a sudden call is sometimes made for their money. This money may have been invested in opening the work in new fields, and in order to meet this demand, we may be forced to borrow from the banks at a high rate of interest. Let us obtain all the means possible as straight gifts. If today more gifts were brought into the Lord's treasury, the sacrifice would yield a rich harvest. Learn from past financial mistakes. The General Conference has been presented to me as weighed down beneath heavy debt, and I have been shown that were this institution freed from this encumbrance, it would not lose its moral health and power of action by repeating the experience of the past. The General Conference should not be called upon to limit its resources by placing itself in the bondage of still greater indebtedness. The center of the work has been presented to me as a fountain, which is to supply the great dearth of gospel teachers in places where the standard truth has never been lifted. Then let no voice be heard appealing for means to establish expensive buildings. And let none think that such a large outlay of means will bring in a proportionate revenue. This has been done again and again, and it has resulted in the loss of means to sustain the work of God, the grace of God, which should flow to all the parched places of earth, has been hindered. When once these large investments are made, there must be a continual outlay of means to maintain these institutions. These heavy drafts are sapping our supplies, and when God's voice has spoken, saying, "Go forward and lift the standard in new fields," there has not been sufficient facilities with which to commence the work. Thus, the enemy has worked to weaken the heart and head of the cause. God designs that we shall learn lessons from the failures of the past. It is not pleasing to him to have debts rest upon his institutions. We have reached the time when we must give character to the work by refusing to erect large and costly buildings. We are not to copy the mistakes of the past and become more and more involved in debt. We are rather to endeavor to clear off the indebtedness that still remains on our institutions. Our churches can help in this matter if they will. Those members to whom the Lord has given means can invest their money in the cause without interest or at a low rate of interest, and by their free will offerings, they can help to support the work. The Lord asks you to return cheerfully to him a portion of the goods he has lent you, and thus become his almoners. When men in positions of responsibility are in such a hurry to establish some new institution that is untimely, the showing made is not only against the interests of the Lord's cause,
but against the interests of the men who, in human wisdom, have tried to advance too rapidly. God is not glorified by those who attempt to go faster than he leads. Perplexity, embarrassment, and distress are the result. The Lord does not desire his representatives to repeat these mistakes, for the past record of such movements does not glorify him. There are now in existence a few overgrown institutions, the cost of which eternity alone will reveal. These have been expensive to the cause, not only with respect to the amount of money actually expended in their erection and maintenance, but also with respect to the evils that have resulted in consequence of their establishment. Who can estimate the alienation, the strife, the heartburnings, the recriminations that are directly traceable to the effort to establish some of our larger institutions? Many of these difficulties have never been healed. A kind of frenzy has taken hold of the minds of men, leading them to do that which would absorb means without any prospect of afterward producing peace. Had this money been used in the way God signified it should be, workers would have been raised up and prepared to do the work that must be done before the coming of the Lord. The misappropriation of means shows me the need of the Lord's warning that his work must not be bound about by human projects, that it must be done in a way that will strengthen his cause. By working on wrong plans, men have brought debt upon the cause. Let not this be repeated. Let those at the head of the work move cautiously, refusing to bury the cause of God in debt. Let no one move recklessly, heedlessly, thinking, without knowing that all will be well. Educate members on tithes and offerings.
Let all who fear God come up to the help of the Lord and show themselves faithful stewards. The truth must go to all parts of the world. I've been shown that many in our churches are robbing God in tithes and offerings. God will execute upon them just that which he has declared. To the obedient, he will give rich blessings. To the transgressor, a curse. Every man who bears the message of truth to our churches must do his duty by warning, educating, rebuking. Any neglect of duty, which is a robbery toward God, means a curse upon the delinquent. September 10th. There has been work you, Andrews, ought to have done that you have not done. To preach the truth everywhere just as it is, pleasant or unpleasant. To impress upon the churches and individuals their God-given responsibilities in tithes and offerings, in selling and giving alms. Impressing them that God had entrusted them with means that must be used to advance his work. That they were handling the Lord's money. The question is asked, will a man rob God? And the reply comes, just as it will come from the conference over which you have presided. Wherein have we robbed thee? The answer comes from God's messenger, in tithes and offerings. Ye are cursed with a curse, even this whole nation. Malachi 3, verse 8, 9. The same sacred obligation rests upon you and upon the people. You have not done your duty as an overseer of the churches of God in Illinois. Many presidents of state conferences do not attend to that which is their work, to see that the elders and deacons of the churches do their work in the churches, by seeing that a faithful tithe is brought into the treasury. Malachi has specified that the condition of prosperity depends upon bringing to God's treasury that which is his own. This principle needs to be often brought before the men who are lax in their duty to God, and who are neglectful and careless in bringing in their tithes, gifts, and offerings to God. They, the words of instruction on tithing in Malachi, are so positive that no one who desires to understand his whole duty to God needs to make any mistake in the matter. If men offer any excuse as to why they do not perform this duty, it is because they are selfish and have not the love and fear of God in their hearts. September 10th. Determining wages. In this life, those engaged in the ministry should receive fitting remuneration for their labor. They give their entire time, thought, and effort to the service of the Master. And it is not in the order of God that the wages paid them should be insufficient to supply the needs of their families. The minister who does his share according to his ability should receive his just due. The men who decide what each worker shall receive are to strive earnestly to meet the mind of God in their decisions. Some who have served on auditing committees have lacked in discrimination and judgment. At times, the committee has been composed of men who had no real understanding of the situation of the workers, and who have, again and again, brought real oppression and want into families by their wrong decisions. Their management has given occasion for the enemy to tempt and discourage the workers, and in some cases, has driven them from the field. Scrupulous care should be shown in settling the accounts of the laborers. Those who are chosen to act on the auditing committee should be men of clear perception, acquainted with the work they are handling. They should be able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness. Exodus 18, verse 21. The minister should have a margin to work upon, for there are many calls made upon his financial resources. GW 449, 1915. Those who are bearing administrative burdens in connection with God's cause can afford to be fair and true. They can afford to deal on right principles. When, in a time of financial stress, it is thought that wages must be reduced, let a circular be published setting forth the true situation, and then let those employed by the conference be asked whether, under the circumstances, they could do with less for their support. All the arrangements made with those in God's service should be regarded as a sacred transaction between man and his fellow man. Men have no right to treat the workers as if they were inanimate objects, with no voice or expression of their own. GW 452, 1915.
The ministers that ought to be encouraged in the field have no inducement. They cannot live upon the small wages allowed them. The Word of God declares, "The hire of your laborers are kept back by fraud." James 5, verse 4. This is generally understood to apply to wealthy men who employ servants and do not pay them for their labor. But it means more than this. It applies with great force to those that are enlightened by the Spirit of God, who act out and work in any degree upon the same principle that these men do in hiring servants to do their work, and then grind them down to the lowest price. Those who have charge of our institutions, the sanitarium, the college, the publishing house, the missions established in various places, are not to depart from the rules of strict integrity for any bribe or money consideration. There are those working in these institutions who are dependent for bread upon the means they earn. Often these workers labor just as hard and faithfully as the men who are paid three times as much. Be careful not to crowd down the wages of the poor below what their labor is worth. Beware lest any injustice be done them, and they cry unto the Lord against you, for you will surely lose every dollar that has been wrongfully withheld from them. More than this, injustice or oppression on your part will lay a stumbling block for their souls. Many are receiving, in our institutions, the training for their life work. Be careful what influences are brought to bear upon them. The managers should carefully guard both the health and the morals of the workers. See that none are urged on, or even allowed, to ruin their physical and mental powers by overwork. It is not sharp reprimands that will keep your workers in the right path. It is the influence of a straightforward, just, unselfish management, that which heaven can commend as good and faithful. Matthew 25, verse 21. Injustice. Those who made and executed the plans appropriating God's entrusted money in large wages for themselves were not profited thereby in a single instance
although they may imagine that they were. In accepting this money, they reveal that they could not be trusted to handle the Lord's goods. This action will stand against them, revealing that they were actuated by principles that God has not given us any liberty to adopt in His work. The action in this matter instituted in Battle Creek robbed the cause of God of money which He would have employed in advancing the work where the banner of truth has not been uplifted. The payment of such large wages was entirely contrary to the plan of God in any line of His work. It was contrary to the example of Christ in His life. The greatest teacher the world ever knew gave every institution in our world a pattern of self-denying, self-sacrificing principle. Those who change God's order of things in order to follow the counsel of selfish men will be prompted to cut down the wages of men whose work is, in the sight of God, of such a character that through him their influence is bringing means into the treasury to sustain his cause. This action before the universe of heaven and before men reveals the character and disposition of the men who are handling sacred things. And under the inspiration of the same selfish spirit, these very men, if they see a chance, will cut down the wages of the laborers in the vineyard of the Lord, without their consent and without understanding their situation. In many cases, this action brings families into strait places, and those who have the power in their hands know little what may be the consequences of deducting from the wages of the laborers. It is just as much the right of the ones employed in the cause to have a voice in such transactions as it is of men employed in various branches of trade. God's cause can afford to be fair and true. It can afford to deal on right principles. When any such work as cutting down wages is contemplated, let a circular be published setting forth the true situation, and then ask those employed by the conference if, under the pressure of lack of means, they could do with less means of support. All the arrangements with those in God's service should be conducted as a sacred transaction between man and his fellow men. Men have no right to treat the workers together with God as though they were inanimate objects to be handled about without any voice or expression of their own.
The displeasure of God is kindled against those who claim to be his followers, yet allow consecrated workers to suffer for the necessities of life while engaged in active ministry. These selfish ones will be called to render an account, not only for the misuse of their Lord's money, but for the depression and heartache which their course has brought upon his faithful servants. Those who are called to the work of the ministry and at the call of duty give up all to engage in God's service should receive for their self-sacrificing efforts wages sufficient to support themselves and their families. A 340-341, 1911. Sanctification through the truth bears fruit to the glory of God. Under its power, men are stripped of the ambition that contends for the supremacy, stripped of the selfishness which leads men connected with our institutions to grasp, in their covetousness, all they can obtain from the treasury in large wages, when they know that their brethren, laboring just as hard in fields where the wear and tear is great, and often under heavy pressure of circumstances, do not receive much more than half of what they receive. The men in our institutions who have placed such a high estimate upon their own services are not sanctified by the Holy Spirit. They have not that sanctification which gives them sensitive consciences, leading them to love God supremely and their neighbor as themselves. Their influence and example are detrimental. They do that which they would not wish their brethren to know. They grasp from the treasury. They are blind and cannot see that by so doing they are depriving others of the wages they should receive. Their selfishness shuts them away from the sanctification of the Spirit of God. Disproportionately high wages. In the early days of the third angel's message, those who established our institutions and those who labored in them were actuated by high motives of unselfishness.
For their arduous labors, they received no more than a mere pittance, barely enough for a meager support. But their hearts were baptized with the ministry of love. The reward of whole-souled liberality was apparent in their close fellowship with the spirit of the master worker. They practiced the closest economy, in order that as many other laborers as possible might be planting the standard of truth in new places. But in time, a change came. The spirit of sacrifice was not so manifest. In some of our institutions, the wages of a few workers was increased beyond reason. Those who received these wages claimed that they deserved a greater sum than others because of their superior talents. But who gave them their talents, their ability? With the increase of wages came a steady increase of covetousness, which is idolatry, and a steady decline of spirituality. Gross evils crept in, and God was dishonored. The minds of many who witnessed this grasping after higher and still higher wages were leavened with doubt and unbelief. Strange principles, like evil leaven, permeated nearly the entire body of believers. Many ceased to deny self, and not a few withheld their tithes and offerings. The work of God in all its wide extent is one, and the same principles should control, the same spirit be revealed in all its branches. It must bear the stamp of missionary work. Every department of the cause is related to all parts of the gospel field, and the spirit that controls one department will be felt throughout the entire field. If a portion of the workers receive large wages, there are others, in different branches of the work, who will call for higher wages, and the spirit of self-sacrifice will gradually be lost sight of. Other institutions and conferences will catch the same spirit, and the Lord's favor will be removed from them, for He can never sanction selfishness. Thus our aggressive work would come to an end. Only by constant sacrifice can it be carried forward. Those in our institutions who grasp at the surplus means disqualify themselves to understand what it means to be a partaker with Christ in His suffering. The high wage plan should never have seen the light of day. Those in charge of our institutions have no greater burdens to carry than have the faithful workers in other parts of the Lord's vineyard. There will never be an end of the controversy which God has with the men in positions of trust until thorough work is done in cleansing the institutions from the stain which has rested upon them. God will provide.
The means in our possession may not seem to be sufficient for the work. But if we will move forward in faith, believing in the all-sufficient power of God, abundant resources will open before us. If the work be of God, He Himself will provide the means for its accomplishment. He will reward honest, simple reliance upon Him. The little that is wisely and economically used in the service of the Lord of Heaven will increase in the very act of imparting. In the hand of Christ, the small supply of food remained undiminished until the famished multitude were satisfied. If we go to the source of all strength, with our hands of faith outstretched to receive, we shall be sustained in our work, even under the most forbidding circumstances, and shall be enabled to give to others the bread of life. Seek God, believe in Him who has infinite resources. If we move wisely, putting our ability into the work, the good hand of God will be upon us. We must push forward the work, not waiting to see the funds in the treasury before we undertake it. God forbid that when His providence summons us to enter the fields white already to harvest, our steps should be retarded by the cry, "Our treasury is exhausted. We have no means to sustain the workers that are already in the field, and it is impossible for us to enlarge our operations." May 7th. Times are growing hard, and money is difficult to obtain, but God will open the way for us from sources outside our own people. I cannot see how anyone can take exceptions to the receiving of gifts from those not of our faith.
They can only do so by taking extreme views and by creating issues which they are not authorized to do. This is God's world, and if God could move upon human agents so that the land which has been in the hands of the enemy may be brought into our hands, so that the message may be proclaimed in regions beyond, shall men block up the way with their narrow notions? Such conscientiousness as this is anything but healthful. The Holy Spirit does not lead men to pursue such a course. Let all be careful how they interpose themselves between God, the great master worker, and his people. We should see and acknowledge the workings of his providence and bow to his authority. Let every messenger of God attend to his own specific work and not rush into a work that is simply after his own wisdom and devising. Let the Lord's messengers go unto the mercy seat, that they may receive wisdom and grace to know God, to understand his workings. Knowledge of God will give them well-balanced minds and sound judgment, that they will not move impulsively at this critical, important time of earth's history. May 7th.